Today's reading is by Lois Van Leer, inspired by the traditions of Yom Kippur. Let go. Let go of all that binds you, all that burdens you, of what you carry, of all that shames you, a fear of trespasses and transgressions, of woundedness. Let go of guilt. Let go of anger. Let go of small-mindedness and pettiness, of ways of being that no longer work for you, of compulsions that consume your living. Let go of what you cannot change. Let go of regret, of that which haunts you. Let go of pain. Let go of ways that you have missed the mark. Let go. I want to share a story with you, a story from our past. This is a true story about the work for justice, which continues, and about how one of our own great Unitarian Universalist leaders had to learn an important lesson to be a part of it. The year is 1834. The place is Boston, Massachusetts. It's a crisp fall day. The city of Boston is in turmoil around the issue of slavery. Abolitionists are publishing pamphlets condemning slavery in the most uncompromising, fierce, ferocious of terms. That summer in New York, anti-abolitionist, pro-slavery riots had broken out. That summer, thousands of white supremacists had rioted in the streets of New York, vandalizing both churches and the private homes of abolitionist activists. And on this autumn day in Boston, the leader of the fledgling Unitarian movement is wrestling with a crisis of conscience. William Ellery Channing. Does anybody know about Channing? Channing was the founder of Unitarianism. He was the one who sort of coalesced everything that was going on in his culture and put it together and said, this is a new thing called Unitarianism. That was what he gave to us. He was one of the greatest Unitarian ministers of the 19th century. William Ellery Channing knows that slavery is wrong. In private, he has been meeting with abolitionists for months, but he is scared to speak out publicly. At this time, not a single church in the entire city of Boston will have anything to do with the abolitionists. They will not rent space in their buildings, let alone have anything to do with their work. And when I say not a single church, I include Unitarian churches. No one. Now, Channing is at this time one of the most famous preachers in the country, in a time when preachers were legitimately famous. He has name recognition. It's true. He would publish a book of sermons, and it was on the bestseller list. This is serious. People knew who this man was. His own congregation is lukewarm at best on the issue of slavery. Many wealthy folks, business people, they were making money off it like anybody else who was well-to-do. So Channing is struggling with whether or not to speak out publicly in the face of indifference and likely even some hostility from his congregation. He is not sure he wants to be associated with the abolitionists anyway. He believes in what they're doing, but he does not like how they're doing it. Their tactics, for him, are too extreme. Their words, too inflammatory for his taste. And on this fall day, A young colleague of his comes to visit. Samuel May is an old friend of his. Channing had helped Samuel May become a minister back in the day, so they've known each other for a long time. Samuel May is an activist. He's deeply involved with the abolitionist movement. They're talking about the movement, and again, as has happened many times, Channing is starting to talk about how he believes in the cause, he just doesn't like the tactics. And May is growing more and more frustrated until finally he just has to speak. And I want to read to you his words as recorded by Dr. Channing in his memoirs. This is what Channing remembers being said to him. "Dr. Channing, I am tired of these complaints. It is not our fault that those who might have managed this reform more prudently have left us to manage it as we are able. It is not our fault that those who might have pleaded for the enslaved so much more eloquently have been silent. We are not to blame, sir, that you, who more perhaps than any other might have been heard throughout the length and breadth of the land, we are not to blame, sir, that you have not spoken. And now, it is not becoming in you to complain of us. Why, sir, have you not moved? Why have you not spoken before?" Dead silence. Channing's lips are pressed together. Silence. And then Channing relaxes, and he quietly says to his friend, "Brother May, I acknowledge the justice of your reproof. I have been silent too long." Shortly after that meeting, Channing began to speak out publicly against slavery, and for the rest of his life, he did not stop. So I wonder what this story is saying to us about our time, this moment. Could we not tell a similar story about our Unitarian Universalism in the 21st century? Because here we are, wrestling mightily with the legacy of racism and white supremacy in our own beloved faith tradition. We have been engaged collectively in racial justice work for decades. I know many of you in this room have been in the trenches all along. As a faith, we have done some good work. And we've made a lot of mistakes. And we've learned a lot, and we still have more to learn. And in this moment, something new is happening. Something new is happening in our country. I think you've seen it, you've felt it. With Trayvon Martin's death, and then Ferguson, and Charleston, and Baltimore, and Minneapolis, and too many other cities that have witnessed the killings of young black men and boys by police. With the emergence of the Black Lives Matter movement and the prophetic witness of black and brown activists whose voices are touching hearts and demanding change. And with the powerful conversations happening right now in our own Unitarian Universalist associations, with our leaders of color calling those of us who identify as white to look and look and look again at all the ways the culture of our congregations can send subtle and not so subtle messages that can make people of color feel less than fully welcome. Calling all of us to realize that white supremacy lives in everybody, and it's nobody's fault, but it is everybody's work to learn new ways of being. Something new is happening. And then the summer with Charlottesville, my God, and the horrifying night and day when white supremacist mobs took to the streets with torches and then with clubs and guns. And now with a blatantly racist president who insults and threatens athletes of color for peacefully witnessing to their truth. And just this week, picked a fight with the mayor of San Juan as she tries to help her people in a desperate time. With all of this, those of us who identify as white in this country are coming to see what many of us had not fully seen before, what people of color have long been trying to tell the rest of us, that black and brown people have been and continue to be the targets not only of oppression and violence, but of state-sponsored violence here in this, our country, and it has to stop. It has to stop, and it will not stop until there is a critical mass of people with the resolve and the power to make it stop. And I believe that all of us want to be part of that critical mass, do we not? We want to be part of the solution. We want to be part of the healing, part of that work of creating safety where there has been danger and fear, and creating freedom where there has been bondage. We want to be part of the holy work of repentance and reconciliation to which we are called as a community and as a country. And to do this, we need the courage to be wrong. Let me say it a different way. We need the courage to let go of needing to be right and to have been right about the way the world works or about the best way to make things better. I think of William Ellery Channing, this extraordinary leader who did so much to create the religious tradition that sustains us today. I think of him in that moment when he was so sure he knew the right way to be an activist. So ready to criticize the folks who were too aggressive for his taste. And then when his friend confronts him saying, "Why are you criticizing us? If you believe in what we're trying to do, why don't you just help us?" Can you hear the echoes in our own time? Activists getting criticized, not for their goals, but for using the tactics that seem best to them. Do you remember a couple of years ago during the election campaign when Black Lives Matter activists disrupted a Bernie Sanders campaign rally? Do you remember that? And how much pushback they got, how much criticism, and the critiques of activists who have staged protests blocking roads and highways, how criticized they are. It's like, you know, racism is there, but God forbid we should have a bad commute. There is so much willingness to nitpick and judge. And I think this is very common among those of us who are white, this feeling that we get to decide what kind of activism is okay and what's not okay. I have to own this in myself. I feel at times this sort of nervous judgmentalism coming up. This can crop up when we're feeling uncomfortable with what's going on. But we need to learn how to notice it and not let it control us. When that happens, I try to remember that moment in William Ellery Channing's story when he was able to hear his friend's challenge, "Stop criticizing us and help us." It was hard, hard, hard for him to hear, but he summoned the grace to listen and to receive it, and then to say, "You're right. You're right, and I am sorry, and I will change." The courage required of him in that moment, the courage to let go of his need to be right, to be an expert, to be in control, that courage to be wrong and know it and accept it, and then learn and go forward, that is exactly the kind of courage required of so many of us in this moment. This is the work for so many of us who identify as white and perhaps grew up with some measure of privilege, for those of us who don't really know what it's like to feel unsafe in the world, who don't really know what it's like to feel terror when a police siren pulls you over. Those of us who identify as white need the courage to continually open our minds and our hearts and say to our siblings of color, we want to understand. We want to understand your experience of the world. We want to understand what it's like to be you, what's beautiful and what's hard, and we want to hear how you want to make things better. And then those of us who identify as white need to listen and listen and keep listening, even and especially when what we hear surprises us or upsets us or confuses us or makes us angry. We need the courage to listen and learn, the courage to release our need to be already right and already perfect. And this is hard. So how wonderful it is that we have spiritual resources to help. In this season of Yom Kippur, I would say, especially to those of us who are white, let us lean on this beautiful and wise tradition that invites all of us to acknowledge our mistakes, to see ourselves both clearly and lovingly, knowing that we are imperfect human beings, whose nature is in part to make mistakes and to cause pain. And who can apologize? We can make amends. We can learn and change in the service of love. And to the folks of color here today, I would just say, I am so glad to be here with you. I hope that we can learn from each other. It is my deepest hope that this congregation is a place where all of us can be fully ourselves, fully seen and heard, fully valued and fully loved, and that we can partner together to make this a reality, not just here, but everywhere. That's the work. May it be so, and amen.